Today we get to join with churches all over the island, all over the province, all over the country, all over the world, and we get to and we celebrate the resurrection of Jesus. Isn't that a good way to spend a Sunday morning? I think it's all right. And for us here at City Light, I'm super excited about this. We're celebrating Easter today, but also today is the beginning of a brand new sermon series that we're going to be starting called Love Reigns. What a perfect title for us to be able to land on with today. Love Reigns. And what we're going to be doing over the next number of weeks, the next 4 weeks, is we're going to be discovering all the different ways that God's amazing love transforms our lives, the way his amazing love transforms our past and our present and our future. I'm excited to see where that takes us. I'm excited to see and recognize where God is working in my life, where he has been working in my life, where he is right now and where he's taking me to. Because we know this, we know that it was the love of God that caused Jesus to come to earth and offer himself as a sacrifice. We know that it was his love that caused Jesus to do that. And we know that it is his love that continually offers us a new life through this risen Savior. So today, we celebrate. We celebrate love. Most people celebrate love on February 14th. I think for us, Heidi's not here. She's downstairs teaching. So I'm not trying to get out of Valentine's Day. Like, I'm not trying to get out of buying her some flowers and some chocolate, but I think if we're going to celebrate love the right way, I think today is a good day to celebrate love. Don't you think so? Yeah, it's okay. You can clap and say yes, it's okay. I know, we're going to get really charismatic here today, aren't we? So here's what we know about Friday. We know this about Friday. We know that when Jesus was being crucified, the soldiers, what they did was they mocked him. They mocked him and they put this this crown of thorns on his head. And then they put this sign over him that said, King of the Jews. What they did was they mocked him because they didn't really see Jesus as the true king that he actually was. The king that rules and reigns over all the things. And then after his resurrection on Sunday, what he did was he reveals himself to his disciples because he's defeated death in that. And what he does in that, what he does in his resurrection is that he claims all authority over heaven and earth. What he does actually is he claims his kingship is what he does in that moment. And it was Jesus' love that held him on that cross. And it's his love that can reign on our lives now if we put our faith and our hope and our trust in him. And so as we start this new series today, I want us, I'm in this obviously as well, I want us to keep these questions in mind as we go through the next few weeks. The first one is this: do I see Jesus as the authority in my life? And the second question is, does his love reign over the way I live? So let's keep those in mind as we go through this the next couple of weeks. Here's the thing about love. Most people actually underestimate the power of love. And I would say this. I would say that actually love is the most powerful force on earth. I know that many of you out here, I think, and I hope that many of you can relate to the things that love drove you in order to, say, win the heart of a loved one. Like, what things did you do to catch someone's eye? Like, what did you do, Doug Newman, that you tricked Jane into marrying you? Because I can't imagine that would have been simple. I can't imagine that would have been the easiest thing to do. Wow. Right off the bat, I'm going at Newman, eh? You're there. Listen, I'm about to shoot myself in the foot here, too. I remember meeting Heidi. I remember when I first met Heidi. She always tells people that ours is an arranged marriage. It's not. That's not my culture. I'm Chilean. It's not a thing we do. But she likes to tell people that because I'm ambiguously beige. And so people don't know how to react to that when she says that. And so I remember when I met her, her dad was pastoring a church in Northeast Calgary. My dad was a pastor, and we were renting space from them. And so they wanted to become friends, these two pastors, and they decided that our family should be friends. And so we invited Heidi and her family over to our place for dinner. And at that point, I was finally getting back on track with my life and clean and all those sorts of things. And I was like, oh, Dad, like another, do we really have to be there for this dinner? Like, do we have, like, I don't want to meet some pastor's kid. Like, I'm a pastor's kid. I got no space in my life for pastor's kids. Like, I know what they're like. They're going to be nerdy, and they're going to be all these things. And my dad was like, yeah, like, you're 26, 27, and you moved back home. My rules, my house. And so you're going to be at dinner. And so there I am at dinner, and then this girl walks in. And I'm like, holy smokes. I'm sticking around for dinner. And she blew me away. I couldn't believe it. And then we kind of made our way. And what happened over the next year was that she was in charge of kind of overseeing her church's young adults group. And I was in charge of seeing our church's young adults groups. And we came up with all kinds of excuses to get both of our groups together for events. And the reason behind it was so that we could build relationship between the two churches. Really, we were just setting up group dates so that we could hang out. And then after a year of having met that very first time for dinner at our place, one day we were all out as groups, and my sister, oh, thank you, Jesus, for my sister and just her foresight into things. Because what my sister did was she drove Heidi to this event, and then she said, hey, maybe you should give Heidi a ride home, because I hadn't been moving on anything. And so I was like, oh, yeah, good idea. So I asked Heidi if she needed a ride home. Oh, yeah, she said, I'll take a ride. She lived a block away from the church. Like, it took us longer to get in the car and drive out of the parking lot than it would have taken her to get home. And so she gets in the car, but my lovely twin brother, he decides he's going to make it as awkward as possible. He jumps in the back seat of my car. He knows what's up. He knows what's going on, and he's going to do it anyways. And so then I pull up to her house, and I awkwardly ask her out on a date while my brother's sitting there going like this. I was like, oh, you. And so we went on this date, and to impress her. If you know anything about Calgary and area, I decided this had to be the best date ever. I was going to take her to Banff for lunch. So Banff is about an hour and 45 minutes, close to 2 hours, depending on how heavy your foot is. And I decided I was going to take her there because I needed to impress this girl. And so it would be like me and her driving up to Nanaimo now for lunch and coming back. And so we got in the car and we drove up and we're in Banff, and I'm just fighting every urge to just hold her hand because it's our first date, and I just want to hold her hand so badly. I want to know what that feels like. And I'm trying to impress her, and we have lunch and everything. We have to get back because I'm overseeing this youth group again, and so we need to get back. They've decided they're going to go out for dinner as a group, so we join them. And so our date starts like at 11 o'clock in the morning, and it ends at like 11 o'clock at night. And I just didn't want it to end. I just kept looking for excuses for her to hang out with me longer. And here's where I almost blew it. Because you know I got there, right? So I go drop her off. And I walk her up to her door. And we're both kind of smiling at each other. And then I do it. I go in for a kiss. First date. I go in for a kiss with a good Mennonite girl. She laughed as I went in, and I got nothing but teeth. And we laughed, and I thought, this is the girl for me. The things we do. Love is the driving force behind all our sacrificial actions towards our friends and our family and loved ones. Many of us, most of us, will gladly pay any price in order to demonstrate how much we care for somebody. Love is powerful. And it moves us to do amazing things. And before there was ever an Easter Sunday, there was a Good Friday. And before there was ever a resurrection, there had to be death. And so for 33 years, Jesus walked the earth demonstrating love by serving the hungry, by healing the broken, by delivering the oppressed. He announced the kingdom of God and the restoration of all things. He claimed to be the Son of God, and many believed him to be the true King of all things. But that kind of thinking was dangerous. That kind of teaching caused all kinds of conflict. At that time, the rulers of the area were Rome. And what they had done was they had installed a vassal king, Herod the Great. And Herod the Great was two things. He was a tyrant and he was a coward. And he was constantly afraid that his authority would be undermined as the king and ruler of that space. And the potential of another king or another one claiming to be the king, not of just Israel, but the king of all things, had to be dealt with. See, Herod believed that both he and Jesus couldn't reign over Israel at the same time. And so then the Jewish religious leaders and the Roman centurions, what they do, they work together. They work together. They have Jesus arrested. They have him brought to trial. He's convicted. He's beaten. And then he's forced to carry that rugged wooden cross all the way to that hill where he would be killed. We can read that story in Matthew 27, 32, 44. I'll read it for you quickly here. Along the way, they came on a man from Cyrene named Simon and made him carry Jesus' cross. Arriving at Golgotha, the place they called Skull Hill, they offered him a mild painkiller, a mixture of wine and myrrh. But when he tasted it, he wouldn't drink it. And after they had finished nailing him to the cross and were waiting for him to die, they killed time by throwing dice for his clothes. And above his head, they had posted the criminal charge against him. This is Jesus, the King of the Jews. Along with him, they also crucified two other criminals, one on his right and one on his left. And people passing along the road jeered, shaking their heads in mock lament. You bragged that you could tear down the temple and rebuild it in 3 days. Well, show us your stuff then. Save yourself. If you're really God's son, come down from that cross. And the high priest, along with the religious scholars and the leaders, they were right in there mixing it up with the rest of them. They were having a great time poking fun at him. Well, he saved others. He can't save himself. King of Israel. They let him come down from that cross. We'll all become believers then. He was so sure of God. Well, let him rescue his son now, if he wants him. He did claim to be God's son, didn't he? Even the two criminals crucified next to him joined in the mockery. See, the crucifixion of Jesus, it was marked by ridicule and disbelief. The soldiers mocked him. Those standing there to witness mocked him. The people walking by mocked him. The priests and the teachers mocked him. Everyone telling Jesus, hey, get off the cross if you're the king. See, what they didn't understand was this. They didn't understand that the true test of Jesus' power and authority was not in his ability to save himself from crucifixion, but it was in his ability to overcome the death that that crucifixion would result in. And so sometimes for us, we miss the proof of Jesus' lordship because we're expecting him to prove himself in certain ways. But then Jesus does something completely different. We're like, oh, I'll believe in you if you do this thing, and here's my expectation. And then Jesus flips the tables on you, and he does it completely different. And what tends to happen to us is this, is that like we decide in our hearts that we're not going to trust Jesus unless he actually meets our expectations. Jesus, I'll believe in you, but you got to heal my mom, and then I'll believe in you. Jesus, like, I'll believe in you, but, like, I need this job. And so if I get this job and this job security, I'm in, baby. Like, I'll follow you to the ends of the earth. What happens is that we can't trust and obey him or his authority in our lives. Like, we don't allow ourselves to see him as the king unless he meets our expectations, unless he ticks the boxes. Like, Judah and I, Judah's been job hunting lately, and so we have his resume, and we're walking around, and we're filling all these applications, and Judah wants his job, and I'm hoping he gets the job at Little Caesars, because that means crazy bread for me. But we do this, and we go, and we fill out these applications, and it's box after box after box, and you got to fill it out, and then at the end, you hope that that person looks at it and goes, oh yeah, you're the one for the job. And this is how we treat Jesus. We're like, here's my list of things. Let's see how many of these boxes you'll tick, Jesus. And then I'm going to put you as the Lord of my life. Then you'll be the king of my life. And that's the kind of, like, that's the kind of thinking that plagued the people in the time of Jesus. Like, it's that same mentality that drove Herod to think that I need to be part of the death of this guy because he can't be the king as well as me. What happens is that when we demand that Jesus prove himself to us on our terms, like, we rob ourselves. We rob ourselves of seeing Jesus actually work in our lives. And Herod, he wasn't the last one to actually feel threatened by the kingship of Jesus. He wasn't the only one that struggled with the idea of Jesus being in charge. The truth is, this is an idea that we all still struggle with all the time, today. Like, in our lives, there can really only be one king. It's been said like this: on the throne of our hearts sits the one who reigns in our lives. So we have to choose. Is it going to be Jesus that sits on this throne? Or is it going to be me? Like, we have to come to that spot. Because we can sit in this chair. This is a comfortable chair. I tried it out before I brought it up this morning. Like, I could have this in my living room with my coffee, with my phone. I was going to say newspaper, but hello, 2025. I can't check Instagram if I don't have my phone. And we can choose to sit on the throne of our lives. But you know what happens when you're the one that sits on the throne of your life? You're in charge. And you're making all the choices. And can I tell you this? We don't make good choices. It's true. Because the hearts of men and women are broken. And they are not to be trusted. So we can sit here and be in charge, and we can make decisions that we think are going to take us where we need to be. And I promise you that those decisions will only leave you empty. So what's our second choice? We leave that space for Jesus. We say, Jesus, this is the throne of my life. I can't be trusted because my heart is not good. But I know that love reigns when you are in charge. I know that love reigns when I give you authority over my heart. And so we leave that chair and we leave it for him. There can only be one king in your life. You can only have one thing that has lordship over all that you do. And when we listen and when we make room for him on the throne of our lives, what happens to us is that love reigns through us. We follow and we listen, and what happens is that we put others first and we live sacrificially. And when it comes to the way that we speak and act and live, he is the king. Now, the truth is this: if Jesus is dead, none of this matters. But we're not here this morning because we think Jesus is dead. We are here celebrating because we think Jesus is alive. We sang it this morning. And we hooted and we hollered and we put our hands up. And that wasn't just for ourselves. It's because we're praising and we're worshiping the true King of all things who is alive. So these things matter. 3 days after Jesus was crucified and laid in that tomb, to everyone's shock and amazement, what happens? He appears. And he meets with his disciples and he meets with many others. And the thing is that they had seen him killed. Because seeing is believing, right? I mean, that's how we are nowadays. Seeing is believing. They had seen him killed. They knew he was dead. And now here he is eating and drinking and walking and talking with them. Because Jesus' love for humanity had overcome death and defeated evil once and for all. His resurrection is the proof that he is indeed the King of all things. It's the proof of it. There was this famous artist, Paul Doré. What happened to Paul Doré was he was traveling in Europe. He's traveling in Europe, and he's going from country to country, and he comes up to a border crossing, and he realizes as he comes to this border crossing that he's lost his passport. And so he comes up to the boarding cross, and there's the guards, and he wants to get through, and they ask him for his papers, and he says, "Actually, I've misplaced my passport." And they're like, "Well, we can't let you in without a passport. That's not how these things work." And he's like, "But this is who I am. I'm this guy." And he's a famous painter in that area. And they're like, "Yeah, we have all kinds of people coming to the border telling us there's somebody. And they could be anybody. We can't let anybody in. Like, we have people coming in all the time telling us, hey, I'm so-and-so and I'm so-and-so. And we can't do that." And so he tries and tries, and then finally one of the guards says, "All right, here it is. I have a test for you then. Here's a piece of paper and here's a pencil. Why don't you prove to us who you are? If you say this is who you are, there's a group of people standing over there. Sketch them for us." And so what he does is he does it so quickly and so well that the guard can't help but seeing it and go, "Oh, you are who you say you are." And so they let him through. And what happened was is that his work confirmed his word. Jesus' work confirms his word. Even though everybody doubted him, everyone mocked him, what happened was death didn't have the last say in this. Jesus' work confirmed his word. He is the King of all things. Love had the last word because love reigns. We know this. We know this from one of the most famous Bible passages of all. I mean, you see it at football games. You see it everywhere. John 3:16. This is how much God loved the world. He gave his son, his one and only son. And this is why. So that no one need be destroyed. By believing in him, anyone can have a whole and lasting life. See, Easter is the day that Jesus was given authority over all of heaven and earth. And it didn't matter how many people doubted it. It didn't matter how many people mocked him. He was able to rescue himself and the entire world. No matter how many people questioned his power, he defeated the cross and death once and for all. The love of God was the authority and was reigning over the entire world and still is now and can reign in your life. Love can reign in you. Jesus said this in Matthew 22, 36 to 40. And it's when he was having a go at these religious leaders that are trying to get him to prove who he is. Kind of like those guards that are saying, "Okay, show us." And so they're having a go at him. And so they've asked him, "What's the most important rule? What's the most important rule to be in favor with God? And Jesus answered him, love the Lord God with every passion of your heart, with all the energy of your being, and with every thought that is within you. This is the great and supreme commandment. And the second, because Jesus always brought more, right? And the second is like it is in importance. You must love your friend in the same way you love yourself. Contained within these commandments to love, you will find all the meaning of the law and the prophets. Contained within these commandments to love, you'll find it all. If you let love reign, this is where you will understand. So to be a disciple and a follower of Jesus means this: you have to give him the throne of your life. You have to do it. You can't sit in that chair, as comfortable as it is. It's not going to get you anywhere. You give him the throne of your life, and then what happens is a lifelong process of becoming more and more like him. And over time, what we learn, if we let love reign in our lives, is we learn to live generous lives, and we learn to forgive, and we learn to love others, and we learn to self-serve others, and we learn to practice self-control, and we learn to be people of peace. When we submit to the love of Jesus, we're compelled to live our life like him, and then we get to invite other people into it. Because it's not enough that we want him to reign in our life. We want him to reign everywhere. This is what it looks like to let love reign in you. Because love reigns, Jesus defeated the cross. Because love reigns, Jesus was given authority over everything. Because love reigns, we get to look like love. So this morning, if you're joining us here for the first time, whether it's in-house, whether it's online this morning, I don't want to finish this message this morning without being able to step into this space. If this morning you're hearing this for the first time, if this morning you're here and you've heard this, but you've said, you know, I'm pretty comfortable in the chair of authority in my life, if you're here this morning, this is where you've been, and you're ready to get out of that chair and say, you know what? I'm not the one that belongs in this chair. Like, if you're here this morning and you're like, I'm ready. I'm ready to get out of the chair and turn it over to love. Like, this morning, I want to give you a chance to respond to that. Like, this morning, I want you to say, yeah, you know what? No one's asked me to get out of the chair. No one's actually let me know I shouldn't be in the chair. No one's given me an opportunity to even think about getting out of this chair. Today I'm doing that. If you're here this morning and you haven't had that opportunity, if you've been thinking about it, if you've even thought about it once, I'm giving you an opportunity this morning. I want you to say to Jesus, you know what? I'm ready to get out of the chair. I'm ready to let love rule. I'm ready to let love reign. So we're going to finish with some prayer time. And while we do that, if this is you this morning, if you're here this morning and you're ready to let love reign in your life, I'm going to ask you to put your hand up. I know, that's scary stuff. I hate it. I hate when someone asks me to put my hands up. I hate when someone asks me to be brave. But I'm going to ask you to do it. So I'm going to ask the rest of you all, I'm going to ask everyone to bow their heads for me this morning. Because it's not a show. We don't want to see who's putting their hands up and who's not, who feels that way and who doesn't. But I can't leave this morning as we celebrate the fact that love reigns. I can't leave here this morning without knowing that we've given the opportunity for someone to say, that's me. You're actually talking to me today. And so if that's you today, I'm going to invite you to put your hand up for me. I'm going to invite you to do that. Thank you. Thank you. I see those hands. If you've put your hand up this morning, my heart is full for you. My heart is full for you this morning. Let me pray for you. If you put your hand up,